Good morning.
Hey.
Is this Dimitri?
No, it's Moses.
Oh, hi, Moses.
How are you? Staying
I'm
healthy?
Doing okay, considering. Oh, yeah.
Are you traveling or sheltered at home?
No, I was on the last American flight back from Buenos Aires 13 days ago. So, escaped barely in time.
Well, I'm glad you and everyone else on the call is healthy.
Yeah. Thank you. Why is this taking so long? Good morning, everybody. While we're waiting for people to arrive, is there anybody who wishes to volunteer to be the scribe today? Love for the scribe task to be resolved quickly. Hey Moses, you've returned near to the top of the scribe list. You up for scribing? Moses?
Hi, I'm actually the worst note taker of all time. So I've been very reluctant to take that responsibility on. Instead, I've like brought recorders with me to meetings and stuff. So if that's okay, I prefer not to.
Okay. So on our list we have Troy Ronda, Gabe Cohen, Sumita Jonick. I was at the top of the list, Ted Tebow, Ken Ebert, Heather Vessant. Seems like we go through a lot of these names every week. Amy is a regular on this. Drummond, are you? Marcus?
There's the volunteer on the regulars. IRC. I just want to point out.
Oh. Oh, Yancey Fabulous. So. Okay, so we'll go ahead and start the process. So welcome to the W3C Credentials Community Group call. We hold this every Tuesday. Our agenda is here in the IRC. That is if I can switch tabs. Okay, here we go. Our Anyone can participate in these calls. However, in order to introduce any substantial contribution to our work items, you must be members of the community group with IPR assigned. You can join our community officially at this URL. There is no charge, but there is a IP agreement that you need to agree to that makes sure that everybody is protected. Some notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call will be archived. We basically have someone volunteer to keep minutes, and the audio recordings are available. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as take minutes. So if you're not on IRC right now, you should look at the agenda instructions on about how to get on. We ask that all attendees type present plus, that's present in the numeral symbol plus, to get your name on the attendee list for the transcript. When we get to the main part of our meeting, type Q plus to add yourself with the queue. You also can add an optional reminder to help you remember what you wanted to say. You can say Q plus TO, Q plus 2, say mention the DID spec needs something. If you're not on IRC, please simply ask to be put on the queue. Be brief when you are selected to speak so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. This meeting is held by voice. We use IRC for sharing of links and these other different types of things, but we really want to keep a single thread of conversation. We have a scribe. Thank you, Yancey, very much. Now we go to our introductions. Is there anybody who's never been on one of our calls before? Just type Q plus or speak up briefly, and we'd like to get you to introduce yourself. Any introductions? Anybody new to the community? Okay. We also do reintroductions, and these are members of the community that we haven't heard from to reintroduce what they're up to and what they're doing. Moses, you haven't been reintroduced for a while. Do you want to quickly say what you're up to and reintroduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Moses. I run two things, a little boutique consulting company, and the other one is a venture incubator. And I've been interested in decentralized identity for many RWATs now. I think RWATs are equivalent to dog lives, dog years. Anyway, I would be happy to chat later about what we're doing in this area of location privacy. Okay, thanks.
Next is announcement. Thank you. Next is announcements and reminders. Basically these are all on GitHub now. If you have something that you would like to let the credentials community know more about, basically you can do a pull request on this page. You will see that all three major conferences are now either postponed or going to some sort of virtual series because of COVID. More details on their websites. We have three regular calls that recur every week. There's this call, obviously, on Tuesdays. There is a Verifiable Credentials for Education call on Mondays. It says Thursday, but it's Mondays. We need to fix that typo. And there's a DID resolution call on Thursdays. So if you're interested in these subgroups, that's when they meet. And you're welcome to post more announcements there. Does anybody want to share anything that would be considered an announcement now?
Yeah, it's Moses. I did have a question. Is there a plan to do an online R1 meeting? I've been looking at some software called Hopin, Hopin.to. It's actually pretty good for online virtual events. We could do breakout groups. We could do speeches. We could even have sponsor booths so that people can sponsor and do
right.
little socials.
Yeah. Well, we are looking for some volunteers to begin investigating some of these types of things. We didn't have time to replace the Buenos Aires thing. We did hold a couple of meetups in the SSI meetup webinars, but we don't have a formal.
Okay. I'll volunteer to help produce something with whoever else wants to. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think I contacted Hopin, and you know they weren't. You know they wanted me to do schedule meetings and you know do all this other kind of stuff before they were willing to share with me any details of actually how it worked, which was kind of frustrating. So I haven't responded to any of those. But if you've got have actually taken a look at it or allow us something to join, let me know.
Yeah.
So somebody typed in announcement. Oh, it's Adrian. How do I get rid of that? Okay,
shall I speak while you're trying to get rid of it? Okay,
yeah,
so I am continuing to work on, for lack of a better term, let's call it a dynamic coronavirus passport. It's a very simple use case that basically involves either a doctor or a patient or both having a wallet that can have appropriate credentials for the doctor to sign a declaration about a patient, and the patient to then show it to somebody else. And the point here is that I don't have a wallet in particular. We've always, in HIE1 and Trustee, we've always used UPort. I had a long conversation last night with somebody associated with Sovereign. There's a similar project there. There's a call on Thursday. So the announcement is if anybody within earshot is interested in either providing the first wallet or a compatible wallet to be used for this extremely simple use case of a doctor based on whatever trust framework there may or may not be, signs an assertion about the serological status or whatever about a patient, you know, that they've looked at because they get a report. How do we do this within the context of what we're all trying to achieve? Please connect with me directly, and I will try and update the group as to where that goes. This is the simplest of all possible use cases.
Okay, so I presume this is maybe who the person you were talking to, but Manreet Najjar, his Twitter handle is TRUU_ID, supposedly is working on, you know, one for the National Health Service. I've been
yes,
in conversation
and there's
a
this
couple
Tony
of times.
Guy. Yeah, there's also, yes, that's part of it, but there's also this Tony person. I forget his last name. I think it is Tony.
Tony Rose?
Okay. Yeah, Tony Rose. There you go.
Right. So I have a contact in the United Nations. He was he's one of the emergency response people, and he's been saying for a couple of years that he wants a something for emergency response type things, like, you know, going to Haiti after an earthquake, that is physician centric, in the sense that, you know, if a physician can basically say, hey, you know, this person who doesn't have any ID or lost in the earthquake or whatever, can give them, you know, temporary status to do things like, you know, help him with, you know, medical stuff or whatever, or be able to pick up supplies for him or whatever. So I have that contact. He's with the Roddenberry Foundation now, which is a, you know, emergency response nonprofit. Anyhow,
oh, good, but you see what I'm saying? I'm just asking for people who want to talk about the wallet aspect of this rather than the more subtle things, you know, about how we encode credentials and how do we have fancier trust frameworks than just I claim I'm a doctor and here's why type of stuff. And that's what I'm
I still think we – yeah. So good, and we'll talk more about that in the meat of the meeting. So let's move forward. Okay, agenda. Here we go. We do need to briefly go through progress and action items. Basically, we use GitHub. No, Jonathan removed himself. Okay, so we do GitHub for all of our issues. Then we choose from them each week a couple of issues to go through. So the first one is some issues with SIP. This is issue 87, and so I wanted to thank Riharo, who. Let's see, here's issue 87, and Riharo basically did do some work on allowing people to use LinPhone. So here's the update information there. So why is this important? It's because this chat channel isn't free when people call into it. Digital Bazaar has been maintaining this bridge, and it costs them money. So when you can connect via voice over IP, such as using LinPhone, you can, they can avoid having charges for you. So it's always a good idea to figure out how to do it. These tools and such keep on changing. Riharo at least figured it out for LinPhone. I do encourage more contributions from community on, you know, how to do this with the iPhone or Android or whatever to be able to connect to these calls. So you can make PR requests to this connecting thing, or if you notice any problems or any changes, you can do that there. Next on issues is what are the registries process. So we have just basically an announcement. We had thought that the registries process and how it would work would be defined by the W3C. There's the issue. But we discovered that they basically punted and did not put it into the W3C processes 2020, and instead moved it to the next year. So we have to puzzle out how we're going to be doing processes ourselves. I don't know if there are people that want to comment on this now, but the basic issue is that we have the responsibility in the community group because we don't have to be rechartered every couple of years to handle a number of long-term responsibilities for various working groups and such. For instance, the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, which finished its work, is basically asking that we maintain and try to build some consensus on proposals, which will then be brought back to a different form of the Verifiable Credentials Working Group for approval. So, and we also are doing, we're just maintaining registries of information about verifiable credentials. So, what are the right procedures for doing that and such, the processes we're going to have to figure out ourselves. Okay, so now we move on to the meat of our location privacy and pandemic discussions. I sent on the list, you can see it in the agenda, a list of a number of early links. Just for reference, just look at the bottom of the agenda. But there's been a lot more. If you look on my links, you'll find quite a few other links to topics of location privacy. And I think there was a legitimate question of how much the CCG should be involved in location privacy. I think there's a couple of different issues here. One is, in my opinion, location is kind of the Achilles heel of correlation. So there's an aspect of no matter how good our verifiable credentials are, we need good location privacy to keep them from being correlated in other areas. We may not have control over that, but I just want to bring that up. But there are also discussions and such about being able to make various kinds of proofs around location as verifiable credentials. And then I think in general, there are lessons to be learned in thinking about this appropriately and thinking about the privacy issues of location privacy in general and the ethics and our responsibilities in these types of things to that are lessons learned that we can use for our own work. So just wanted to start that up. Did we have any people who wanted to talk about the CCG and its role in diving into this topic a little bit today and such? I don't see Leonard. Leonard was one of the people that was concerned. Okay, so moving onward, I wanted to point people to first to a particular article, which was by Ranieris, Elizabeth Ranieris. Trying to find the link, I had it in front of me. Okay, well, I'm gonna too many windows right now, but there it is. Yes. So, one of her big questions was when you're looking at these types of things, first off, are you allowed by law? And from there, what are the other things we ought to look at from an ethical stance when we are, implementing some of these types of things? So I think that's a good sort of high level start on looking at location data and what your obligations are and such. I think there's another good article on you know, sort of the ethics and responsibilities in these types of areas. So I don't know that we have a, you know, a coordinated list of, you know, how do you think about these types of things. We did do a work, we have a work item on data minimization and selective disclosure that we have an early draft on, but I don't know that we've really, you know, talked about it from this sort of ethical and legal respect. So that's something that, you know, we could continue to either add to our data minimization existing work item, or maybe it's a worthy item to, you know, here are the things to think about and be careful about, and here's some anti-patterns, and here's some good examples of, you know, how to think about this stuff. So for instance, with Adrian's and true IDs, verifiable credentials for, you know, you, and also the German government is doing work on, you know, credentials that say, hey, you have, you have recovered from COVID, thus, you know, may be able to participate and go places that or communicatable people have. But, you know, what are the questions you should be asking yourselves to see how this information could be abused? So, you know, having some kind of coordinated way of thinking about those would be a good thing. I did reach out to Elizabeth. I would love to see her participate here. Okay, Moses, go ahead.
Hi, everybody. So
I'm working in this area right now, so I'm going to share the slides I've come up with. So I don't have to go through them but with you, but you're welcome to download it and to contact me.
But I'll just go over really quickly the things I'm thinking about. And again, this is like only a few days old. Okay, so one is we're talking to the CIO of the state of Colorado about possibly doing a pilot of some sort of privacy protecting contact tracer in a medium to small town or city to test it to see how it works. And if, you know, with privacy protection, it could be as effective as, you know, without. I have a client who built the city of Naples in Florida, a big real estate company, and I've inquired with them as well. So we've put together a proposal. Let's see. So I basically think that it's possible to do two phases. I think phase one has to happen really fast and will probably be based partially on the Trace Together. Trace Together only uses Bluetooth. We're probably going to use Google Nearby, which has no call phone home built into it. But this will give us, it supports Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and audio, you know, high frequency ultrasonic audio. It actually lets phones connect if there's no network at all to figure it out. And also gives you, Google Nearby gives you a range, how far away the person is. So you can actually use that to figure out if you have a proximity issue. Right now, most of the systems that are contact only are using Simple Trace. That means if you get it, you tell everybody in the last 2 weeks you got it. And then you can opt to share that list with the government. And then if those people also said you could share my info, they'll contact people and get everyone tested. It's only been deployed recently, so nobody knows how well it works. But definitely Singapore is doing a pretty good job.
I just wanted to share this link. This is one of the more detailed blogs that talks about the various approaches to date and suggests some different things. You know, I do have a concern that, you know, we have, you know, great intentions here, To a certain extent, we really do need to do the kinds of requirements engineering and thinking at the higher level of, how do we support consent? How do we support that people don't force consent? Like basically saying you can't work, you can't do business, you can't survive unless you reveal this information to us that it's supposed to be consensual. We've learned a lot of lessons from the HIV area when you can allow these kinds of things to be criminalized or whatever to force consent, then it can be as bad as the consent things. So so there's both a technology side of this that is important, and I think we can do better. I have my own ideas about zero knowledge and location information, and there are others who have good work in this area. But no matter how good the technologists are, if we create systems that allow people to be coerced into that stuff, we're losing what we learned from the HIV crisis about making this type of stuff voluntary.
Okay.
I don't know how to, it may not be the role of this community to be involved in these types of discussions, but as one of the co-chairs, I thought it would be useful for us to have kind of this broader discussion about both sides of it, the technology and, how do we prevent some of these higher level policy issues.
Great. So can I finish what I was going to say?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. So a couple of other things for phase one. I think that the best we could do is a down payment on privacy. I don't think we can do like a full DID deployment. It would probably be not ready for stress testing. I also believe it should be EHR compatible. And then I've been talking to Adrian Gropper about that. Finally, I think it'll sell on the basis of how pretty the CDC or Department of Health dashboard will be. So we have lots of really pretty React code for dashboards that we've been doing for enterprise sales that we think we could integrate. Anyway, that's phase one. I think that's doable quickly, and I'm trying to get the city of Boulder to support it. And we'll see how that goes. Phase two is actually more interesting. This will happen in a few months to several months. And I think this is when we can actually test verifiable credentials for immunity and immune status, because I think that if you embed it with a contact tracer, you can do an in vivo test for how long immunity lasts. And so it may be a way to sell that. And also if the vaccination works, if anybody gets sick after a vaccination. I think we should also deploy location analysis, which is extremely difficult to do technologically. And in terms of data security, the trace together code basically is very, very light in terms of data analysis. It basically, if you get it, you just tell everybody the last 2 weeks. Our algorithm actually goes back to like 8 weeks and then detects for people who might be asymptomatic superseders. Because right now the estimate is that however many you have tested and proven to have be infected, there's probably an equal number of asymptomatic spreaders. And my belief is that the deal we may have to do with the government is that if it's normal usage, we should have a lot of privacy. But if there's a detection of a super spreader who could kill several people, then the CDC should get access to the data. And it might be interesting to give CDC intelligence officers verifiable claims to get better access to data. And so those are the kinds of things we're thinking about. We have like a team of 20 PhDs around AI and large scale optimization that are also working with this. But anyway,
We need to move on. I'm sorry, Moses, we need to move. So if you've got one last point, keep it short.
Yeah, I'm going through some two friends that are Hollywood producers, and we're trying to get like a bunch of celebrities to do PSAs and line them up. That something dumb like that probably make a difference for whether our proposals get listened to or not. Okay, that's it.
Right. Thank you. So I really do want to, you know, emphasize we need to this isn't only a technology problem. So this article from Financial Times, other, you know, Elizabeth Ranares' work, you know, we still need to bring in the medical ethicists and things of that nature to make sure that we don't deal with the, you know, that we can avoid some of the coercion and some of the things we've learned in the past. Adrian, go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick point. I've been asked point blank, what do you think about Aadhaar, particularly in this context that Chris raised of, you know, once you introduce a program like Aadhaar for doing something that clearly you have to do to distribute money, you know, to individuals without corruption, people want to start using it for health records and for banking activity, and it becomes expected that you will have an Aadhaar number. And so the question that I put to the floor, I don't have an answer, is what is our community's answer to Aadhaar going to be? Is it going to be that we have to have zero knowledge proofs and peer DIDs from the beginning, or is it that Aadhaar is broken because of its centralized security, overly centralized deduplication mechanism? But other than that, you know, maybe it could be fixed. So I think we could go in both directions. They're not exclusive, but I want to cast Chris's question in this Aadhaar context.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't speak for the whole community. I can speak for myself, which is that we can always do better. I think that although, you know, I think there may be some fundamental flaws, that doesn't mean that as a community we can't, you know, recommend some better practices and, you know, some basic principles of ethics and other stuff. I think if we go all the way back to the beginning of the credentials community group, even before I joined it, there has been a strong emphasis on that. We need to be thinking, you know, at multiple layers here, you know, not just purely what the bits are. So we need to think about the implications of what it is we do and how we do it. Let's queue. Okay, so we have no one in the queue. Does anybody else want to talk about, you know, does anybody here actually working actively on a project that we know Adrian and Moses have spoken up, but are there any others here that are working on one of these COVID or other projects right now?
Hi there. My name is John. I don't usually attend this call, but I'm from Enigma. We're working on something, and I would like to you know, talk about it for 2 minutes, if that makes sense for everyone.
Okay. Yeah, 2-3 minutes is fine.
Sure. So our experience is in privacy. We have worked. So right now we're working with trusted execution environments, and we're working on this project called SafeTrace. And SafeTrace aims to address privacy and data silo problems around contact tracing. So basically what we're building is we're building a privacy-preserving compute and storage service that would allow any kind of contact tracing app to, you know, share location and status, like data, in a privacy-preserving way if you trust the, you know, the guarantees of a trusted execution environment. And that way we're trying to, you know, A, address user privacy issues because all data is like encrypted locally and then goes to the enclave where the processing is done. And we also aim this to like break data silos because for contact tracing to work, we need to get to a mass participation level. And it's very hard to have this like localized in like 10, 20 different efforts, given how this is spreading. So that's kind of what we're doing. We're working with a team in Austin that is doing mobile tracking there. I want to bring this to people's radar because our goal is to help people offload their private database and computation requirements.
Okay. Well, thank you. I know, you know, I'd written up some things in the past on various approaches to, you know, pseudo-anonymous, you know, location privacy, including some interesting things, you know, using, like I wrote this up mostly as a patent breaker. Let's see, where is the link? Here it is. You know, about how to use zero knowledge proofs, which I've written up in like 2008 or so, using some Hibbert curves to allow for some location obscuration, et cetera. But to a certain extent, it doesn't matter what our you know, what our technology is, if we don't have the policy underneath it. So I do encourage you to, you know, it sounds like yours is not the safe path thing, but, you know, so this adds, this is like the fifth or sixth that I've heard in recent weeks of an organization doing some kind of contact tracing. Probably, you know, there's Singapore's, there's Israel's, there's SafePaths, and then I'm also hearing that there's some stuff going on in the EU. Here is a guidelines for administration of location privacy from the EU link. But, you know, please, you know, keep us informed, send the list about your project, and you know, we do have some people here with some experience with you know, implementing zero knowledge credentials and other cryptographic mechanisms that might be of use to you, or that might be able to give you some peer review. Jonathan, go ahead.
So one is my new announcement as far as the new role. So I was just recruited to be the CMIO, the Chief Medical Informatics Officer for Consensus Health. And as part of that, we're actually having a hackathon. Joe Lubin's going to be one of the judges, myself, hopefully Vitalik, Brian Bellendorf. And so mostly it's the theme is data is the medicine we need right now. So really, how do we leverage track and trace and certainly verifiable credentials, although I'd have to say, so I've been with Manny from TrueID and Jack Callahan. I've been working on an immunization record as a verifiable credential, which I think I presented on this call a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and being the sort of like the hello world in healthcare as being a vaccination record. And I think, and I certainly see the point, and I was half listening earlier about the challenges with really, it's the governance model, is that even though we have the certificate, the authenticity of that certificate and how to integrate that into a cohesive whole so that you really have either the we've rebooted the web of trust, or we actually have chains of trust that actually go to clear certificate authorities of the existing infrastructure. So, and I have a call later on today with the ABMS, the American Board of Medical Specialty, where I'm an advisor too. And it's really the challenge of what is primary source information? How do you actually tie that together? I myself am a physician. I'm getting my renewing my medical license in California and here in Illinois to be on the front lines. But it's certainly the challenge is not the immediacy, because my piece of paper is good enough for this immediate use case. And so I think But hearing earlier, I think that certainly the German government actually interest in the laboratory results. And I think the challenge is how do we actually get to the governing model that we're actually all on the same page with the semantic interoperability of the healthcare data that would be sufficient to satisfy the credential. So I think coalitions that are actually trying to synergize on that nomenclature.
Okay, great. So Adrian, back to you.
Quick question, Jonathan. Is this effort, Consensus Health, what are the IPR, the standards issues, the open source license issues around it? So you're planning a hackathon. Is there a business overlay onto this hackathon, and who gets to participate?
Certainly, I imagine. I think the hope is that people use the Ethereum Consensus platform and some other products, and so, but more to follow as far as the details. Obviously, are very important as far as the intellectual property from either the hackathons that I've participated in or the hackathons that I've ran in the past. It really is about your code is your code. You've created it. And you own it, and the judges only have enough information in order to judge the merits of the code to solve this immediate problem. From my understanding, Consensus Health does not, or Consensus Proper does not own any of your code, but I think the opportunity to actually commercialize it with venture capital as being a springboard is I think, the synergy. All of that, I have a meeting in like an hour to actually for the formal announcement, but if you look at and follow our website, all the details will be there, and it's going to be run by Gitcoin, which is also a company of Consensus.
Right.
So can you put in the notes where is a link to this information, including the hackathon participation, please?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to announce it officially, but I thought it was a missed opportunity if I didn't mention it. So again, a full announcement in 2 hours, and I'll email it in our the list serve.
Thank you.
So we're getting on 15 minutes left in the session, and I wanted to ask the community, what is this community's role here? What is it that is this? You know, are we just sharing this information to everybody and hope that good things happen? That we think about the ethics, we think about the law, we think about the processes, we think about consensus. In an informal way, and this was just an educational thing, or are there some concrete things? Can the community group is in kind of a unique position that we have the ability to publish reports that our W3C credential community reports that people can refer to and link to, et cetera. They don't have the force of standards, but they do mean something, and is there, some way that we can do something, or is this just I think you get my drift. What anybody in particular have some ideas here about what our role is? Continue discussions on this. So I see Adrian says, he would love to see, what could we suggest to communities like Abhar, and I might even put Estonian identity stuff to make it better. Jonathan, go ahead.
Well, I think certainly this is where the sort of rubber meets the road for applications of blockchain technology immediately to solve the real world health crisis. And so I think, and certainly I appreciate the call for maybe now is the time for verifiable credentials to shine. But I'm cautious because it seems like it's a rushed job. And so I think that we're giving up a sense of security, a sense of trust. And I think if it if it, this is basically a power grab, it is not going to look favorably on us, and the future will not look favorably upon us. And I think that what I've mentioned before to either some of our rebooting Web of Trust or IRW meetings is that, you know, the original idea of Tim Berners-Lee was being, you know, spinning up a node underneath his desk and being on the first node of the World Wide Web. Like, and ultimately, he couldn't run his computer 24/7. So it really empowered cloud computing, which really centralized power into companies. And so I think this technology of, you know, self-sovereign digital identity, of data democratization, does have this ability to bring the power back into the hands of the individual. And so I think that should be a mantra, and it should be certainly a core primer on the utilization of this technology, not just to allow it into the hands of governments, but still allows that sense of autonomy. And so I think that probably would be the message of hope, that this technology is being used for the right purpose, and it will stay being used for the right purpose. So I think it maybe would just be a statement from the community that rises to the challenge, and then, you know, not only has the mantra that you don't be evil, but you can't be evil. And here's what we mean by that, and or the potential threats to our security and data democratization, and how to avoid that.
So I just posted to the community, there is an example of a CCG report. It's not final, but, you know, it basically talks about what is data minimization and selective disclosure and such, and doing something that, you know, maybe was more concise and brief, but about this might be something favorable for us. I mean, one of my concerns here is that we have not only segmentation by nation. So Singapore is doing one officially, Israel is doing one officially. You know, we have all these proposals for these individual nations to do things. But then we also have kind of a segmentation by platform and company. So, I mean, I appreciate that Consensus is doing a hackathon, but you also said you really wanted them to emphasize using Consensus technologies. So, and we have lots of startups and, you know, and other organizations. The World Wide Web Consortium is a central meeting place. You know, something that has IPR, you know, has a path into international standards, et cetera. And I don't consider it a big tent. And maybe we can, you know, start with, in this community, a report on, you know, the general issues here. Here's, you know, a checklist of things, starting at the high level with Elizabeth's checklist and then going down into, you know, here are the things to be careful of, might be a good start. But I also feel like, you know, whether or not it's this community group or, you know, maybe there's goes to the privacy community group or to other things, that the W3C is a good umbrella for this type of thing. Juan, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say phone. That. Oh. I was just going to say that, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
I was just going to say that I have seen some SSI groups intervening in public hackathons and doing a little bit of proof of concept as public outreach. I think if the question is how do we synchronize our messaging or utilize this sort of PR opportunity, one thing that might be helpful is the Palantir question. Like, Palantir recently said, oh yeah, we're going to work with NHS, we promise we'll delete the data afterwards, and of course the, you know, tech and privacy Twitter and journalism world is just laughing their heads off at Palantir promising to delete the data afterwards. One useful kind of messaging principle might be to insist anytime there's a microphone in front of your face that we actually do delete the data afterwards. It's sort of on a technical level designed to be deletable afterwards. Hopefully, if I don't know if the revocation thing gets a little more advanced. So that might be one thing. I heard Adrian earlier ask, what is our standard messaging for how this is better than Aadhaar? That might be one thing I point to when people, total outsiders, ask me what's so special about this tech. Anyways, that was just my spitballing. Thanks.
Yeah. So whoever's like washing dishes or something of that nature, or you're not, you know, on the queue, please mute your phone because we're hearing a lot of noise. S. Magenis, I think you're next. Sorry that I skipped you. It was just a...
Yeah, no worries. So I think there are really two things I see kind of going on here. One is the issue about, you know, do we have something that is deployable near term that can help, you know, the current situation and still be within our ethos of privacy. And you know, we can have that conversation, but I think the other interesting topic here is around, you know, we're uniquely in a position to discuss the issue.
Can you guys hear me? Yeah, that's a scribe interrupt. Sorry, who's that? Who's talking? I didn't catch your name.
Steve McGinnis.
Thank you.
But I think, you know, we have sort of this unique situation that, you know, we've been talking kind of about, you know, how this privacy works in the abstract. We've got this real world important use case going on. And the folks, you know, within this community, I think are probably, you know, best suited to be able to have that conversation. So I think at the very least, you know, that's something that needs to be done, whether or not we, you know, think it's wise or diligent to deploy systems at this stage of the game.
Yeah. So can you articulate a little more about, you know, what form that might be, or, you know, is this a, you know, is there a work item? Is there some community, you know, more calls required? You know, we've had some people say, well, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, doing some of this. And I kind of resist because I do believe talking about the ethos is important, even if, you know, we don't necessarily have direct call. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, organically, we're already seeing, you know, email threads going on because people have a lot of, you know, thoughts about this, and a lot of people want to, you know, talk about it and test them and knock off the rough edges. I mean, even beyond just sort of the notion of this being, you know, an ethical discussion that may or may not belong here, everything that we do is around privacy and concerns, and we talk about it again sort of in the abstract, saying, well, if this happens, then maybe we can do that, and if this happens, maybe we can do that. Here we've got, you know, real world, a big media example in front of us that we can at the very least test these kinds of things again. So I think it's very much something that is relevant to the work that we do. In terms of, you know, how to go about, you know, having this conversation, I think there are all kinds of different ways we can continue the thread. We can start up a call. You know, I have no dog in that particular hunt, but I think it's worth it for people to kind of continue this dialogue.
Okay. Thank you very much. So while we're getting to the top of the hour, please reply in the mailing list that if this kind of discussion is something that we want to continue to have, either informally in calls or in some side calls, you know, what your interest is there. And otherwise, I hope that this discussion has broadened people's thoughts on these areas, and that, you know, even if the CCG doesn't have a direct role in things, that we still at least influenced by, you know, our discussions and our good considerations here. So please share on the mailing list your thoughts and support, at least for, you know, these considerations. Any last comments in the last 3 minutes of our meeting?
Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this call. We are looking for
agenda items for future meetings, and of course we'd love to have reports out from the people who are working on work items that have already started. So we also have an election and charter change coming up, so we would appreciate your helping us with that. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
I'm on this.
Great. How are you? My camera is broken.
Okay, don't worry. So I stop it too, so we have more line at disposal.
Great. Okay. So what is it that you were talking about? The
I was in the meanwhile that you, of course, are pursuing the code with my team related. In the last 2 weeks, I was thinking a way to arrange properly, even for the available contributes by the European community and related, such a type of innovation token, not just based just on the sovereign one, but even for enterprises, okay? So mainly the idea is how to make a useful way of an alternative finance to jump on intangible assets as the patents, for example, or brands or whatever, make a tokenization, and so give a push of money, of course, for the price. And I made an arrangement for the northeast of Italy with a partner that is an accelerator incubator, okay? And among this, the partners that he has already in place, I have another couple of, but or smaller one, there is a leading company, in, especially on IT, ICT patent, active worldwide, okay? So the idea is to jump on that, to have a vehicle, probable in Switzerland, even because my content for first content for tokenization, even for pushing money out there, so connected to Milan, to Lugano, to Lucas, okay. And secondly, looking even where the current base, looking for something to be pushed on Singapore as well. As you know, Singapore with Hong Kong are the main platform, I think, as developers. So I'm in contact with one tokenization or with one of the leading companies accounting firm that have more than 70 representatives at their office in 70 countries, specialized on the South and Far East, especially. That will allow us, of course, to push on all the scheme on innovation and allow, of course, even to have something really captive for the new, let's say, blockchain and token wave. And in the meanwhile, because there is another pattern that has its own authorized by the financial authority in Switzerland by FINMA, is on platform, but he is also an expert on European continent. He's an expert in Brussels since 2014, and is one of the 10 people in Italy being on the table to consider presentation on demand, especially through the European Innovation Project. that means something like a smaller amount of 500, higher amount 2.5 million for each company. And that will allow, of course, to work on the innovation master plan as well. So with our own software and related. So to go briefly to the point, also what you have also on blockchain patented by yourself, okay? So could be an idea, of course, to go forward this new development tool I'm going to practice and to gain money even for there. And from there start, of course, in total future lab consulting activity. For the contributes in Europe for that kind of things, but obviously globally. I don't know how was your meeting with investors, but that I think that could be a powerful one to many alternative in order to move forward.
Okay, so the meeting went very well with the investor. He's definitely interested. He asked us to refine our presentations this week so he could take it to his partners, and he's still talking $25 million, and that's great. I did send him the COVID contact tracing proposal as a side project, and he is very interested, so I'm meeting with him about that as well. I actually think that an enterprise version of an innovation token is harder to sell than a countrywide one. Because the enterprises, basically, they need to keep the rights to their patents tied up with their balance sheet. So if you raised money off of those, their patent portfolio, it would devalue and have an impact on the balance sheet. So I don't know exactly how you would do an innovation token for an enterprise, but I'm totally happy to let you lead on that. And then in terms of our partnership, in the last meeting, I mentioned working with you. And everybody is so busy on everything else, they didn't say anything. They just like said, sure, it's like not a big deal. So what I need to do is go over the partnership document again and then kind of fine tune everything and then get it signed so you can be authorized to move forward. Okay?
Because, you know, obviously I need your effort in order to move forward because, well, Paolo Petronio is Paolo Petronio, Moses May, and all the future lab consulting group is quite different to endorse even the project, okay?
Yeah.
Totally open.
Yeah.
On the investor point of view, obviously, and even for the partners.
So, did you want to make any last minute changes to the proposed partnership agreement?
I made some. You're referring to the InnoToken project as well.
No, you can just do a one blanket agreement to cover everything.
No, yes, I know. I already sent you back more than 2 weeks ago because
okay.
you lost it, of course, on the nightmare of this.
It's been kind of crazy. Okay, so I'll go dig it up. I just want to know if you wanted to make any more changes to it to maybe name this project specifically.
Yeah, if you can, you can edit it by yourself, or even from the talking enterprise, it, okay. Go free to read it with our endorsement or whatever you want to write it about.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And then after, we are going to specify it on the mutual understanding, the letter of intent among us in order to have a further approach directly with investors as well, okay?
Yes. Okay.
The scheme is always the same. So we're going into Milano to Lugano for the first money and going to